Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company will send $10 in war stamps, plus a copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica World Atlas. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaw. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information, Please, unrehearsed and spontaneous as ever, continues along on its carefree path. The panel of experts tonight, consisting of John Kieran of the New York Sun, Franklin T. Adams, and Oscar Levant, together with a distinguished novelist and farmer, Mr. Louis Bromfield. We're going to begin with a question coming to us from D.E. Quilter of Hoboken, New Jersey. Mr. Quilter wants to know what comic character is brought to mind by these authors. Get two out of three. The first author is Nietzsche. What comic character is brought to mind, Mr. Bromfield?
I say Adolf Hitler.
Well, he isn't quite as comic as he's going to be pretty soon. Mr.
Superman.
Superman.
Man of Superman by Nietzsche, and this one does more things than Nietzsche's Superman.
Yes. Man of Superman is, of course, a play by Shaw. But the idea of the Superman you find in what?
Nietzsche.
Yes, throughout his work, perhaps particularly in what book?
Is this Frank?
Gary Ubermensch.
Well, it's the book, and you find it
Zara,
in the book about
Zarathustra.
Yes, Zarathustra.
That's right. And we have the cartoonist character Superman. I doubt these cartoonists, well, very good ones, have read Nietzsche, and they haven't...
I read Nietzsche.
How'd you like him?
He's wonderful.
Well, I mean, I don't... Nietzsche, yeah. The whole world can. How about this one, from James Whitcomb Riley, a comic character? Mr. Adams.
Little Orphan Annie.
That's right. Little Orphan Annie, from Mr. Riley's poem called what, Mr. Adams?
Little Orphan Annie.
Nice word. How about a comic character was brought to mind by the author Clarence Day, Jr.?
Pardon me, on the Whitcomb Riley. Isn't Barefoot Boy by Whitcomb Riley?
No.
No, well, I'm wrong.
Whitty. Mm.
Is there a Barefoot Boy who's a comic character?
Yeah, Little Abner. He was about 6 years ago. He was. He got shirt now.
Did we get the answer on Clarence Day, Jr.?
No.
Mr. Adams?
Life with Father.
Life with Father. Oh, he's a comic character... I'm not a comic strip character.
Bringing up Father.
Bringing up Father. Who's the artist of that strip?
Mr. McManus.
Yes. Jiggs. George McManus. Bringing up Father. Isn't you reminded of that by Clarence Day Jr.'s Life with Father, which, as Mr. Adams reminds us, has been turned into a play. Now, how about this one from Murray Gladstone of New York City? This is a music question, and I think we ought to get all parts on it. The pianist will play the secondo of three four-hand piano pieces from an album called Piano Duets for Children. You are to name the pieces. All right, Mr. Kahn. Now I have two hands. Mr. Kieran?
It sounds like the Swan, or Senior.
The,
yes, the Senior.
By Saint-Saëns, yes. And Mr. Kahn, would you play the melody for us? That's right. Mr. Kieran, you must have at one time learned how to play as a
musician. No, I heard it before.
It's a very banal piece.
It certainly is.
Thank you, Oscar.
It really is.
It wasn't banal enough for Bromfield and Adams to know it.
That's why it's there. Everybody knows it.
Oh, did you know it? Mr. Bromfield, Mr. Adams.
Are you referring to banal?
No, I'm saying banal. What do you say?
I say banal.
I say banal. What do you say with that?
It's a not a nice... It's a very tiresome piece.
Tiresome. Banal. I think. All right. Try the next one. Now I have the same two hands. Mr. Levant.
I'll sing it.
Drummer-I, a banal piece.
By Schumann.
Drummer-I by Schumann, as Mr. Kieran reminds us. That's right, Mr. Levant. Is that still banal?
That's banal.
Oh, that's banal. How about the third and last? All right, Mr. Banal.
Lionel Brumfield.
That's the Nietzsche's dance, and that's certainly done now.
Let's hear the melody of that, Mr. Carter. Well, I guess that was pretty easy. All right, pass on to the next one. Maybe we can catch you on this question from E.H. Marsh of London, Ontario, Canada. This is about marriage, gentlemen. Suppose a marriage were arranged between the following characters of literature. Would the marriage be a success or a failure, in your opinion, Mr. Anthony? You are to explain your answer. Now, the first set of characters is George Apley and Cassie Struthers. If such a marriage were arranged, Mr. Levant.
Well, Apley would be all right because he wasn't happy in his marriage.
Apley would be all right for whom?
No, I'm wrong. I got Apley mixed up with Pullum, so I withdraw.
Mr. Brumfield, what did you
know? Well, I don't remember who Cassie Struthers was. I know it's in my mind. I know George Apley is, but...
You have no idea who Cassie Struthers is?
I can't remember. I know her name, but I don't remember where it's from.
That's the oddest thing. It's your own character.
You've done that to me once before.
Your characters just don't stick in your mind.
Now I remember who it was. I think it would be an ideal marriage.
Why? Who was Cassie Struthers?
Well, Cassie Struthers was sort of the last run of Shad in New England, and so was George Apley, and they would get on fine, I think.
If you wanted to find Cassie Struthers, in what book would you find her?
It would be in Early Autumn, I think.
Oh, you do remember the title?
I think it would be.
Well, that's very good, yeah. They were both puritanical folks, I guess.
A decadent Puritans.
Might get along pretty well. Do you think that would be a happy marriage?
I think they ought to get on. Late in life, they ought to marry, but otherwise.
Who shouldn't? How about Mistress Nell Quickly and Sidney Carton?
Who's the first?
Mistress Nell Quickly and Sidney Carton. And Mr. Akira.
Well, Mistress Quickly, do you mean a Shakespearean, Miss Quickly?
Do you know another one?
Well, there may have been others that I didn't know, and Sidney Carton might have got on very well.
Why?
Because Sidney drank copiously, and the lady kept the tavern.
Yes, but I disagree with that, because Sidney Carton was a prig, in a way, and Dame Quickly had a very good time. I don't think that he would have disapproved of her very much sooner or later.
You know, I think
drink or no drink, he would have disapproved very much of Dame Quickly after the time.
I have a feeling Mr. Brumfield was right.
He was a prig.
He was kind
up
of
to the last minute.
You don't like him at all?
No, he was all right. He's a nice, noble fellow, but I mean, not very good company.
At least, Mr. Brumfield, you remember his name.
That's the way Ronald Coleman played him, he was no prig.
Well, he did fall in love in Dickens' book with a sort of an angelic character, different from...
But he would be very disapproving, even drunk, of Dame Quickly.
I am inclined to think...
I deny that.
Yes.
You think that...
Certainly, a man very fond of drink couldn't do better than to marry a woman who owned a saloon. That's plain.
He takes a very realistic point of view, Mr. Kieran.
Psychologically, he's wrong, nonetheless.
How about this match? Betsy Trotwood and Sancho Panza. Betsy Trotwood and Sancho Panza. Mr. Kieran.
I do not think so. I think they would fight horribly.
Why?
Because he loved his donkey and she hated donkeys and ordered them chased whenever they appeared in front of her.
That's right. Where do you find Betsy Trotwood?
You'll find Aunt Betsy Trotwood and David Copperfield.
Yes, and you'll find Sancho Panza, of course, and Don Quixote, and it would have been a failure. Unless, Mr. Brownfield, you think that would have been a success. Do you think it would have been?
Well, I think that would have been very bad because Betsy was a very practical woman, too.
The donkey is a prig.
The donkey isn't involved in the marriage. Just to get them together on this question, that's all. How about this one from A.A. Van Riper of Flushing, New York? Let's get all on this. With what war or general do you associate the following? The Old Guard. You associate with what general, Mr. Brumfield?
Napoleon.
Waterloo. What was the Old Guard?
It was held out at Waterloo.
Yes?
And surrounded. It was the last group that remained loyal to Napoleon also.
Do you deny that, Mr. Kieran?
Well, I wouldn't say Napoleon. I would say General Cambron.
Ah, you would?
Yes.
Why would you say that?
Because he was the one who was in command of the Old Guard. Napoleon commanded all his armies, but Cambron was the commander of the Old Guard at the final stand at the Battle of Waterloo and shouted the unprintable word, which is preserved in Les Miserables by Hugo.
Well, there's another bestseller just made overnight.
Yeah.
Mr. Adams?
I don't think it was unprintable. He said the Old Guard dies but never surrenders.
You didn't read the word. now, the taxi cab army, gentlemen. What general do you associate? Mr. Adams, was that your hand up? Yes, sir?
Yeah. General Foch.
No.
You got the wrong general. Mr. Levant.
Jacques.
No.
Jacques.
No. Girl.
Gouraud.
Now we're all mixed up in our jobs.
Gouraud was the one who led it, though. He went to the aid of Joe.
The head man was Joe.
Yes. When did all this happen, Mr. Bromfield?
In 1914. Yes. It was really Gouraud's army.
It was Gouraud's army.
He went to the aid of Joe.
With the aid of Joe. I think I'd accept either one.
It was under command of Gouraud.
But not Clutch. I really think we have to count that wrong, Mr. Adams.
That's wrong.
Now, Mr. Adams, who is connected with the taxi cab army? Let's see if you can remember.
General Joff.
Yeah.
One wrong. Now, the 10th Legion, General, gentlemen, you associate with what general? Mr. Kieran.
I think that was J. Caius Caesar.
Yes. Was it one of his favorite legions?
That's right.
He placed special reliance on it. Well, that gives us only 2 out of 3, sending $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Van Riper and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, here is one coming up from the new dean of Columbia College, Dean Harry J. Carman. Mr. Bromfield, you're a Columbian man, are you not?
That's right.
Well, this is a chance to learn something from the dean. What two methods of attack may be used by these farm animals, the dean wants to know. What methods of attack may be used by a horse, Mr. Bromfield?
Well, a horse can kick with its hind feet or its front feet, or it can bite.
Kick or bite? Mr. Kieran, any objections to that?
No, not any. It can bit, too.
Some horses do. How about a hen or a rooster? What two methods of attack might be used, Mr. Levant?
It wakes you up.
That's
well, it naturally it flies at you with its claws. I don't know anything about a hen.
Mr. Bromfield, can you help out?
Well, it also pecks. It pecks and uses its spurs.
That's affectionate when he pecks.
They'll fight
not that kind of peck.
And if it's a turkey, he'll fight with his wings, too.
With his wings? Is that so? They strike with their feet,
wings.
Don't they?
Yeah, they strike with their feet. A swan will use its feet, its beak, and its wings. It'll break your leg with its wings.
Turkey on a farm, isn't it, Mr. Bromfield?
That was a very perilous life on a farm. You don't ever have to.
You better stick around here. How about a cow? How does a cow... You know what a cow is, Mr. Levant. Mr. Kieran?
Well, a cow will use its horns if it has any. It will also kick, but it doesn't kick the same way that a horse does. For instance, a cow with its hind foot kicks forward. And you'll find that out if you're milking.
It'll kick backward, though, too.
Well, yes, it has a much shorter kick backward than a horse.
Kicked all the teeth out of one of my dogs the other day.
Are you fellas through with these stories about your pet? And what else does it do besides kicking, Mr. Kieran? Is there anything else that a...
Kicking, yes, it'll buck at you.
Yes, it'll butt you with your head. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Now, an entirely different type of question is sent to us from Buffalo, New York, by one Christopher Burke. It's addressed to our Hines reporter, Ben Grala. Suppose you give us the question, Ben, and the answer.
Well, the most unusual thing about this question is the fact that it comes from a young man, 5 months old, transmitted by his mother. But it's an interesting question, and one that's important to some 3.25 million young Americans born this year. Christopher Burke wants to know why I spend all my time talking about the Heinz varieties for grown-ups, but never get around to mentioning those delicious, fine-tasting foods that Heinz puts up especially for the babies. Of course, we know that quite a large proportion of our Information Please audience may not have young babies, but we're all interested in good food. And Heinz baby foods are a fine example of the way in which scientific research, quality ingredients, and what you might call loving care combined to produce the tastiest and best foods that ever added joy to a dinner table. So we thank you, Christopher Burke, and your mother, for your kind words about Heinz baby foods. We're glad you're getting along so well on them. Your soldier father must be very proud of you. We'll act on your suggestion and tell folks a little something about Heinz baby foods and about the Heinz tradition of quality that stands back of them and all Heinz 57 varieties.
Thank you, Ben Brower. Now, gentlemen, try this one from Olive L. Rowell of Holden, Massachusetts. In each of the following passages from songs that are going to be played, a parent is being addressed by a child. You're to tell us whether it's a son or daughter that's doing the addressing, and which parent, mother or father, is addressed in each case. Is that quite clear? All right, let's have the first. Get 2 out of 3 on this. Mr. Adams?
Mother.
Mother, quite right.
Good mother, good morrow.
Good mother, good morrow is from what?
Isle Anthony.
And who is addressing the mother?
Stephan.
Stephan. Being a masculine or feminine name, Stephan?
Stephan is a masculine name, and he says, good morrow, good mother, good morrow, good mother.
Well, he says, good morrow, good mother, good mother, good morrow. That's right. Now the second one. Thank you.
can't think of it.
Is that a popular song?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lately?
I think reasonably. Any idea?
Is that a woman?
It's a woman? Rudy Valli, I think, adapted it from an Italian song about the butcher boy. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
How's it go?
The girl wants to marry Butcher for black market reasons, obviously.
Oh, Mama, get that man.
Yeah, it would be a good idea or something.
Very good idea. She addresses her mother. We got that wrong.
Why? Why did we get it wrong?
Well, we did get it wrong.
We didn't get anything.
How about the third? Maybe we can do better on that one. Mr. Bromfield?
Well, that's very easy. That's Mein Vater. It's the darling child in the Earl Koenig.
Very good. Who wrote the song?
Schubert.
Schubert. That's quite right. Was that right, Mr. Bromfield?
Well, as long as he said it was easy, it's right.
Yeah, you got 2 out of 3 on that. Now, try this one. From Mrs. Leo Creed of Youngstown, Ohio, can you recite a line of poetry about each of these? A heathen, a pagan, and an idol. First, a heathen. Mr. Kieran.
Wasting Christian kisses on a heathen idol's foot.
Idol
made him mud.
You've got your idol and your heathen in one line.
That's
answering two parts at once. Mr. Adams, what were you going to say?
What are the other pagan?
Yeah, pagan. How about that?
A pagan in a world outworn.
Pagan love song.
Pagan suckled in a creed outworn. That's it, approximately. Great God, I'd rather be a pagan suckled in a creed outworn. From whom? Who wrote the lines, Mr. Kieran?
Words.
Yes.
Sounded on nature.
Any other? Can you give us another line of poetry with the word idol in it?
Mr.
Adams?
Tears, idle tears. I know not what they mean.
I won't take it. We better pass right on to the next. Miss Mary Castle of Chicago sends this one in. How did these unusual gifts recently make the news? The first gift, let's get 2 out of 3 on this. The first gift is the works and letters of Thomas Jefferson. How did that come into the news? Mr. Brumfield.
Well, the New York Times, in conjunction with Princeton University, is bringing out an edition of the complete works and papers of Thomas Jefferson as a memorial to Mr. Ox, the former owner of the Times in Bed.
Yes, that's exactly right, and it probably will be a monumental edition. How about a gift of a sword that recently made the news, Mr. Levant?
Mr. Churchill gave a sword to Mr. Stalin at Tehran. Tehran, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Why a sword in particular? What was symbolic about it?
Stalingrad, the standard Stalingrad, which is a symbolic of, you know about Stalingrad. They resisted heroically and it turned the whole tide of the German offensive.
Yes, there's a particular reason why, Mr. Kieran.
The Steel City.
Yes, well, and also the steel-hearted citizens. It was King George who actually sent the gift, and I guess it was Mr. Churchill, who delivered it. And how about a milch cow that recently made the news? A milch cow. Mr. Levant.
The doctor, for some unknown reason, Arthur Rozinski, who was 50 years old today, the conductor of the Philharmonic, the board gave him a cow.
Why did they do that?
The board must be nuts, if you ask me. I don't
know.
The real reason is that Mr. Rozinski is a friend of mine, has a farm up in Vermont, and he used to have goats, and they were too tiresome, so he's given up goats and gone into dairy business.
That isn't the goats version.
They had goats, but they've given them up.
Doesn't Mr. Rozinski breed goats? I thought he did.
He did, but the last time I saw Madam Rozinski, she said they were getting tired of goats and going.
They had yesterday. They had goulash at Rozinski. That I know.
Very nice.
Goat goulash.
Mr. Kieran, Oscar's story is that the goats objected.
What's the name of the cow that Mr. Rozinski got for being a conductor?
What'd you say?
What's the name of the cow that Mr. Rozinski got for being a conductor?
The cow's got a name, too?
Certainly the cow's got a name. It's Pettigree.
Beethoven, I don't know.
No, not a chance. Tulip.
Oh, yeah, Tulip.
Why, certainly, Tulip. That gives us 3 out of 3. Try this one from Mary E. Mann of St. Paul, Minnesota. Name an artist who painted a famous picture of a postman. Famous picture, Mr. Kieran.
Van Gogh.
That's right. Very good, Mr. Kieran. What was the name of the picture, do you know?
The picture, yes, the Postman of Ar. You mean the man's name?
Yeah, remember that. You don't have to remember this.
No, I can't say
Roulin.
That. Roulin. That's right.
Mr.
I was going to say the postman rings twice.
I ring just once on this show. Now, how about a washerwoman, an artist who painted a famous picture of a washerwoman?
I know a composer who did it. Ireland, John Ireland.
Painted the picture?
Portrait of a washerwoman, it's called.
You mean the music?
Yeah.
And that's what does it sound like? You played on a washerwoman?
Very charming.
Charming thing. Mr. Brownfield?
Well, I would say Degas. He painted 2 or 3 pictures.
Yes, he did. Quite right, Mr. Brownfield.
Laundresses and ironing and washing and all that.
Okay. And Daumier also. Daumier, apparently the French artists were nuts about washerwomen. How about the one who painted the famous picture of a blacksmith? A blacksmith.
Mr. Grumpy.
This is Manet, I think.
You have me there. I don't think so, but I may be wrong.
No, I think there is a Manet picture of a black... I remember having seen it, and I may be wrong.
It's possible. There is a more famous one, at any rate, by Mr. Adams.
It might be Titian.
I don't think so.
It's only a picture of Vulcan.
That sounds right. He certainly did make a picture of Vulcan, the god. That's quite right.
No, Frank's right.
Goya's The Forge is a famous picture showing blacksmiths surrounded by the implements of the trade. You've often heard our nutrition expert, Ben Grauer, tell of the importance of a proper diet for your family. But no one knows the value of a proper diet more than a soldier who lies wounded on a hospital cot. It can be his way back to health. And tonight, Ben has a serious message from those thousands of sick and wounded men to every woman dietitian in our audience.
Yes, ladies, from Africa, Italy, and the South Pacific, thousands of lads who have fallen while fighting your battles ask you to help them on the road to recovery. They ask you to serve as dietitians in the Army Medical Corps at home, abroad, and on hospital ships at sea. Uncle Sam urgently needs dietitians now. If you hold a degree with a major in institutional management or food and nutrition, if you have completed an approved dietitian's training course or have had 2 years' experience as a dietitian in an approved hospital and are under 45 years of age, you'll be commissioned a second lieutenant in the Army of the United States. Even if you have had less experience in training, you may enroll as a student or apprentice dietitian and get your commission after completing a training course. So, ladies, answer this urgent call from your boys in uniform. Write to the Surgeon General, U.S. Army, Washington, D.C. Remember, Uncle Sam needs you now.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. Gentlemen, try this one now from Leo Nathan of San Diego, California. I'm going to read a sentence in which certain phrases suggest the name of a card game, and you are to name the card games. Well, I'll start you off with the answer to the first part just to illustrate the idea. Here's the sentence. A woman with a dead pan, wearing a jewel and carrying a weapon, ordered a drink. Now, a dead pan would suggest what in the way of a
poker
game?
Poker face,
which would suggest the game of poker. Now, there are certainly three other phrases in that sentence, which I will now reread. A woman with a dead pan, wearing a jewel and carrying a weapon, ordered a drink. Mr. Levant.
Gin is the last one. Ordered a drink.
Absolutely right.
Gin
rummy.
Gin rummy.
Right. Very good. That leaves us with two other phrases to associate with card games.
Do it once more, please.
Getting easier and easier the more I read it. A woman with a dead pan wearing a jewel. It's getting to be a pretty banal story. A woman with a dead pan wearing a jewel and carrying a weapon ordered a drink.
A weapon must be something.
Attaboy. Now, what do you bring to mind? Weapon. Weapon.
Well,
Mr. Kieran. Mr. Brownfield.
Well, I think it's a club, which isn't a game.
No, it's a thing pursuit, mister.
Might be darts.
Darts.
That's not a card
game. That's a game.
You mean a card game.
I say card game. Yeah. But you can play darts.
The jewel is, it might be hearts. There's a game called hearts.
That's right. But that's not a jewel.
Well, if you're in love and you give a jewel, it's too complicated.
There's too much association there. Jewel should suggest what card game?
It's a diamond.
Something with diamonds.
Well, now what card game is suggested by jewel, gentlemen? You want me to open write this on the board for you?
It is solitaire.
Solitaire.
Of course, that's not a game. That's when you're having self-pity and nobody's around.
That's when you're having self-pity and no one's around. You should have gotten that. Now we have weapon to get.
Weapon. That's not pinochle, it's not bridge.
No, blackjack.
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 We did pretty good on that.
Mr. Nathan is crazy.
He wore it out.
He gets $57 in war bonds and stamps and a set of the Britannica. Jewel, Mr. Adams, should suggest what game?
I still don't know.
That's what I figure. Solitaire. Now, how about this one from Mrs. A. E. Porter of Danville, Kentucky? What is unknown in the lines from poetry or song that include these words? I know not. I know not what? You have to conclude the quotation, Mr. Adams.
I know not was solus bedeuten.
Right. But you have to use two languages to get it right, but that's quite right. What does that mean in English? Yes? I know not what
course others may take.
Say, that's very good, too, my brother. That gives us two know-nots. Yes, Mr. Kieran?
Well, I know not what it means that I am so sorrowful.
That's right.
What's your language, Mr. Kieran?
Pardon, Mr. Levant?
I know not what time it is. That means I don't know what time it is.
You just made up that quotation, did you?
Well,
we got enough know-nots. I never knew. What is unknown in the... I never knew, Mr. Levant.
That's a song.
How's it go?
I know it's a song.
It is a song. You're right. Now, how does it go, Mr. Brownfield?
I don't know that one.
You're all smiles a second ago, Mr. Brownfield.
I know, but it's gone.
I never knew how much
I
knew.
I
know.
I could love
you.
I never knew I would love somebody.
Anybody.
I loved you.
That's right. I don't think you should get full credit on that. How about nobody knows? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows the trouble.
Nobody knows the trouble I've seen.
Oh, yes, I do.
yes, from the famous spiritual. And now try this one from Emily Hall of Los Angeles, California. This is about people who threw spears. Who threw a spear at a horse? Horses keep cropping up on this program. Who threw a spear at a horse? Oh, this is in legend.
Ben?
No.
Ben Hurt?
No.
I didn't say anything. I was listening.
You're just mumbling. Mr.
One of the Trojans threw a spear at the wooden horse.
Quite right. Who was?
I've forgotten his name.
Want me to tell it to you?
Yes, I love it.
Laocoon?
Laocoon.
Yeah, that's
apparently his sons helped him. Threw smaller ones.
Pierced the wooden horse. Concentrate. Why did he do that?
He suspected it.
Was he right?
He certainly was.
The famous Trojan horse. Yes. Now, how about somebody who threw a spear at a tenor? Threw a spear at a tenor.
David the King threw a spear at a musician, didn't he? If somebody threw one at him. Saul threw.
No,
I don't know.
Saul threw one at David. Yeah. Yes, but that's not a tenor.
Well, he was a singer,
yeah,
David.
He was
a
harp player.
He was playing the harp.
How do you know he was a tenor?
Because it says so in Elmer Davis's book.
That he was a tenor?
Yes.
Is it really?
Yes.
Incidentally, Elizabeth Berger appeared in the play You Can Make Him a Soprano. She played the part of David by Barry.
I have to change the whole question to make it a soprano.
Mm.
Also in Parsifal, doesn't somebody throw a spear at Parsifal? Who is that?
That's right.
That would be
Klingsor.
Klingsor
throws a spear at Parsifal. How about somebody who threw a spear at his son?
I know that one.
Very good.
Wotan threw one at Hunding, and Hunding threw one at Sigmund, and then the whole thing.
They could have us.
They were a little bit drunk there for 4 nights.
I haven't as drunk as you sound. It's Rustum who threw the sword at Thorab. Yes, you were going to say that.
Yeah. What's the matter with my Wotan routine?
Well, was it his son that he threw at?
They were all sons of Wotan.
Oh, not everybody couldn't be a son of Wotan.
Yes, sir.
All right, I'll take it. That does not send $57 more bonds, sir, but that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Mr. Brumfield, for helping the celebration this evening. Tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $114 in bonds and stamps and 2 cents of the encyclopedia. Next week, Mr. Kerr and Mr. Adams will be here. In addition, our guests will be the distinguished author and lecturer, Christopher Morley. And to celebrate the reopening of Congress, we'll present the representative of the state of Washington to Congress, the Honorable John M. Coffey.